EA and others versus Needville Independent School District. And Mr. Hepworth, we'll hear from you first.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. In this case, the District Court substituted its own judgment for that of the school board relating to a dress code matter. It decided what is best or most effective, to quote the words that he used in his opinion, way to accommodate the plaintiff's religious beliefs. This is wrong, and it must be overturned. Needville ISD has a dress and grooming code that is neutral and of general applicability. Its purpose is to teach hygiene, instill discipline, prevent disruption, avoid safety hazards, and to assert authority. Relating to the boys, their hair is not to cover their ears or touch the top of their standard collar. Plaintiff's father claims an American Indian heritage and a religious belief to not cut his hair, although he does cut his hair around the sides and in the back. He asked for an exemption from the policy on behalf of his son, a kindergarten student. The school offered several ways that the young man would not have to cut his hair. He could pin it up in a bun, which is a common way of Native Americans wearing their hair. He could braid it and keep the braids off of the collar. And then when they requested an exemption, they allowed an exemption to the general policy that he could braid his hair in one braid and tuck it under his collar. This was a minor change, and then his hair could be worn any way it wanted after school. So that's different from the Alabama Cushota case, where they required the boys cut their hair, and it was always cut. In this case, we did not require that he cut his hair, and the only religious belief was that he not cut his hair. Now, other things, as the case went forward, other things were added on later on, not considered by the school district, the braiding issue. Plaintiff's counsel stipulated that the two-braid issue was strictly a freedom of expression argument and that the free exercise claim was limited to cutting in express question by the court. Plaintiff formulated his beliefs concerning the significance of braiding his hair just before he filed the suit, after the school district had already dealt with their requests. So they're sort of making it up as they went along. The school board didn't challenge a sincerely held religious belief that they not cut their hair. They did at first question that, but there was a point in time when he said, well, I even was going to have surgery and I wouldn't let him cut my hair for the surgery. And we determined that, okay, we believe that that was a sincerely held religious belief. The others, we questioned whether there's religious beliefs at all. There are four main issues. Number one, freedom of religion to not cut his hair. Number two, freedom of expression to wear his hair in two braids to communicate his Indian heritage. Number three, the Texas Religious Freedom Restoration Act, TIFRA. And number four, the substitution of the court's judgment for that of the school board.
I mean, it seems to me, though, that the only issue we really have here is TIFRA. Because if we decide that his rights have been violated under TIFRA, that ends it. And if we decide, for example, that he does not satisfy TEPRA because the burden is not substantial, then that ends it with respect to all of the other claims.
That's true, Your Honor.
So, I mean, TEPRA is the issue here, and that's...
Would you prefer that I argue the other portions? I'd be happy. Let's address TEPRA first, then. Absolutely.
And as I understand the case further, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but... that you concede that there is a sincere religious belief with respect to not cutting the hair.
That is correct.
And the sole question here is whether the alternatives that you have presented are a substantial burden on that religious right that you concede. So, I mean, it seems to me that it's almost limited to that. Is it a substantial burden or is it not?
That's exactly right. And we submit that it is not a substantial burden. The Atkins case. The Atkins case talked about substantial burden. One of you all was on that case, if I remember correctly. Yes, Judge Wiener was on that, on the case. Agins versus Caspar, and talked about religious beliefs. And talked about whether or not it was a substantial burden. A substantial burden on a religious, I'm quoting, government action or regulation creates a substantial burden on a religious exercise if it truly pressures the adherent to significantly modify his religious behavior and significantly violate his religious beliefs. So whether it is significant is, number one, does it influence the adherent to act in a way that violates his religious beliefs? Number two, does it force the adherent to choose between, on the one hand, enjoying some generally available non-trivial benefit, and on the other hand, following his religious beliefs? His religious belief is in not cutting his hair, and in no way did we ever make him cut his hair. We have a general neutral policy, and we had several ways that he could do that, that he could comply with that policy without having to cut his hair. The exemption is one of those ways, which is put it in a single braid and tuck it under his collar. Now, this is not a substantial burden. Braiding it in a single braid, there are pictures entered into the record of him wearing his hair in a single braid, as well as wearing his hair loose.
As I understand it, you must look at the substantiality of the burden through the eyes of the individual, not from the eyes of the district. So that turns that test in a way that strikes me as being particularly relevant.
Well, that's true.
But you seem to be arguing that this is not a substantial burden, but your description is the way the school sees it, not from the way this individual, whom you concede in response to Judge Dolly's question, is acting from a sincerely held religious belief.
Well, certainly his father holds that sincere religious belief, and this is a kindergarten student, so we're going to transfer his father's religious belief to him as well, and we've conceded that as well. But we have not had any burden upon him cutting his hair.
Well, now it seems to me that the district court, reading that opinion, focused altogether on the hair being down the collar of his neck and that would make him uncomfortable. But I also understand that the school has offered the possibility of a ponytail. He could put it up on top of his head. He could wear it in a bun. He could do it any way he wanted to do, as long as it was off his ears and off his collar.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
And there would be perhaps a half a dozen ways that he could wear his hair that would comply with the school policy.
That's exactly right, and none of those ways would he have to cut his hair, and many of those ways are common ways that American Indians wear their hair.
Are you saying that he can wear his hair braided and down his back and not tuck it into his collar?
No, because it would be on his collar then, but he could wear it braided and then pin the braids up on his head as long as it's above his collar. He could wear it in a bun. You're exactly right. There are a number of ways that he could wear his hair without cutting it.
I'm not sure I understand the number of ways. He could put it on top of his head, or he'll either hang it down his back.
Or he could put it in a bun.
He could put it in a bun. He could have it in a
ponytail.
Right. He could have the braids up and then pin the braids up. All of those are, and if you look at the Amici, there are many different styles that are shown that American Indians wore their hair in those manners as well. So that is not a substantial burden. It is a minor inconvenience to have to either tuck your hair under your collar or to put it up on your head.
Is there testimony in the record that from the standpoint of the boy and his family and his Native American religion that those do not comply? That is, that only by allowing a free-hanging braid is he fully complying with his religious beliefs?
Well, there is testimony in the record that plaintiff would have rejected everything that we offered, all of those things that we offered, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that violates their religion.
On the basis of non-compliance with sincerely held religious beliefs?
I don't believe that the record shows that that was why he just rejected them.
I mean, religious belief has been a moving target from the beginning. I mean,
That's true, Your Honor. not cutting his hair is the only religious belief. The other, the braids outside, those are not religious beliefs in this case. It was stipulated by counsel that the only thing is cutting hair. We have not forced him to cut his hair, and our dress code would not force him to cut his hair.
Your regulation has been a bit of a moving target as well, I must say. The initial response, as I understand it, was basically, you don't tell us how to run our school district out here. You may think we're backward, just don't move out here because you're going to have to cut your hair. Now, you move from that. Later, you changed to an opt-out situation. You changed the exemption. And now you're down to an individualized application rather than a general rule. What you're saying is the boy's religious beliefs changed, but what strikes me is perhaps that's so, but you have to confront the fact that I think it's the case, but tell me if I'm wrong.
No, Your Honor.
This has not been a moving target as well.
Let me address that. The school did exactly what they were supposed to do. They have a dress policy. And then they granted an exemption. Yes, at first, we thought that to comply, you should cut your hair. But there were these other ways. And then we offered, okay, put it up in a bun, put it on your hair. When they asked for an exemption, then we went ahead and offered an exemption. Under TIFRA, that's exactly what you're supposed to do. And substantial burden is a pretty high standard. The case says that violates his religious belief or to choose between a generally available or non-trivial benefit. Well, to me, it's a trivial benefit to say, I should be able to wear my hair outside while I'm at school, outside of my shirt rather than tucked under the shirt or up on the hair. That doesn't seem to me to be a substantial burden.
Well, tell me about the purpose of the dress code. That looked to be like a moving target to it. Is it to instill respect, uniformity as in a military situation?
Well, absolutely.
Is it really a health matter of cleanliness? What is it?
It is, and it's on tab 5 of the excerpts. And the dress code is established to teach hygiene, instill discipline, prevent disruption, avoid safety hazards, and assert authority. And I would submit.
If you have one student in the class who, while it's not below the collar, it's in a bun or it's piled in on top of his head or it's a ponytail or something, doesn't that have the same discipline problem as wearing one long?
Or wearing it outside the collar and two braids. I think it's the same thing. As far as discipline is concerned.
That's my point. The alternatives that you are offering are just as a unique defying physical symbol as a braid or two braids.
Well, and he's not worried about the physical symbol. He's proud of his Indian heritage. And
I'm talking about the school and its discipline reasons.
Okay.
Having uniformity.
Well, you know, I think
this violates uniformity. Any of the ones you've offered is all.
Well, but it also shows discipline and asserting authority. And I would submit that is an exceedingly important role of the school district. Kids need to learn when they get out of school. There's rules they have to follow. We have laws. When they have employment, there's rules they're going to need to follow. Just in general, in social situations, there are certain norms that we need to comply to, and that's very important, in fact, as you can see in the amicus brief from TASB, they say that even rises to the level of a compelling government interest. It is a very important government interest.
What interest is served in requiring that a braid be worn in a bun on top of the head rather than down the back? What is the school's interest in that, other than just having a rule?
It is the dress code, and it's in compliance with the dress code so that people learn, okay, we do have rules here, and it is not unconstitutional to just simply say, in order to comply with the rule, I mean, you don't even need an exemption for putting it in a bun or putting it on your hair, and then the exemption was granted to allow him to tuck it under his collar. This was to encourage him to comply as closely as we can to what everybody else has to follow. In other words, to follow the rules as close as we can and still accommodate his religious belief. And so that's what we've done. So I was going to talk about the First Amendment, but, you know, obviously you're correct. If there's no substantial burden, and we submit there is not a substantial burden, it's a trivial burden, then the First Amendment would also apply. And my red light is on. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hepworth. Ms. Terrell?
May it please the Court, Fleming Terrell for AA and his parents, Kenya Rocha and Michelle Bettenbaugh. Your Honors, this case is about a Native American child's right to religious freedom. On the basis of 11 hours of argument and testimony and a review of the administrative record, the district court properly found that NISD punished, rather than accommodated, AA's practice of wearing his hair in long braids.
I was interested about the DNA test that your father was taking to try to establish that he was an American Indian. How did that come out?
Your Honor, that test had been taken some years previously by Mr. Rocha, and when Superintendent Rhodes requested additional evidence to support the exemption request, it was one of the pieces of evidence the family provided to him.
But what did that DNA indicate? Was he or was he not American Indian?
It did indicate that he had biological Native American ancestry.
What extent?
Your Honor, I don't remember the exact proportions. I believe it was a majority Native American, and I would add that regardless of what his biological ancestry is, the test under Texas RFRA and under the First Amendment is a sincere religious belief that's not connected to a particular membership in a particular class.
And did he apply for membership in a tribe, and is that application still pending?
Your Honor, he did apply for a membership in a tribe, and that application and that of his son, A.A., have been granted by the Lipan tribe that has filed an amicus brief in this court today. In punishing rather than accommodating A.A.'s practice of wearing his hair long, NISD violated the Constitution, and it also violated the Texas RFRA. And as this court has found, it need look no further than that RFRA to find ample basis to uphold the decision below, particularly after the decisions of the Texas Supreme Court in Barr.
What is the religious belief that you're claiming here?
The belief that the district court found was that AA's hair be worn long, not simply that it not be cut, but that it be worn long. And that was despite vigorous argument below by the school district that it should be limited to not cutting. So on the basis of that belief, and we would submit even on the no-cutting belief that the school district concedes, it's clear that the punitive policy the school came up with at the 11th hour certainly places a substantial burden on AA's religious practice.
Have you dropped the contention that each braid or each plait of the braid had religious significance?
No, Your Honor. There is evidence in the record to support that those braids do have a religious significance, and the district court found
that each individual braid has some religious significance, some unidentifiable, I suppose. I mean, it doesn't. Braid one doesn't stand for one principle, and braid two for another.
Your Honor, the testimony by Mr. Rocha in the district court was that each braid, the act of braiding, and each braid in relation to the other does have a religious significance to him, and that's supported in the amicus brief submitted by the Lipan tribe in this court. The religious belief does go well beyond simply not cutting AA's hair, although that, even just looking at that belief, we have a substantial burden here. And I want to be clear that NISD, as the record reflects, has tried at every turn to force this child to follow their dress code and conform to its requirements. They can't rewrite history now to make what was a punitive policy adopted at the 11th hour after counsel came in to represent plaintiffs.
I have a little problem with that in the sense that you go to the school board and say, we have this religious belief, and they rejected it first, but then they become convinced that it is a sincere religious belief, And then they try to make accommodations. And now, because they're trying to make accommodations, because they have accepted the fact of the sincerity of your belief, and are trying to make accommodations to it, then you want to turn around and punish them, legally speaking, for making those accommodations. Now, I have a little problem with the logic behind that.
Well, NISD has tried very hard to characterize what it did as an attempt to compromise and be reasonable and make accommodations, but the record reflects, and the district court found, that that's not really what happened. This was a month-long effort by the family to obtain a religious exemption. It was first ignored. Months later, it was denied by Superintendent Rhodes and Principal Sniffen. And the first time the family was directed to go before the school board at the last minute said, "We're not even going to review your request." It was only after they acquired the assistance of counsel that plaintiffs were permitted to go back before the school board. And again, at the 11th hour, is when NISD began.
What did the district court find as a matter of fact regarding these proffered alternatives of ponytail or wearing it inside your collar, which makes me creep every time I think of that? What did the district court find? For example, if you let your hair grow long enough to braid, how will a ponytail keep it above your collar, and stuffing it under a hat or putting it in a bun? Were there specific findings about the validity of those as alternatives?
The district court did indicate that the one option that was offered at the meeting immediately prior to the last school board hearing, days before school began, was to put the braids up into a bun on AA's head, and that was rejected by the plaintiffs. And NISD then adopted the punitive policy it came up with without further consultation with plaintiffs to see if it would comport with their beliefs. And the district court found that requirement, that the hair be down the back of the shirt, would be profoundly uncomfortable for this 5-year-old child, that it would be indefinite, and as a matter of fact, that it would influence him to cut his hair in violation of his religious belief. So I think the record is clear that those accommodations were not satisfactory to accommodate the religious belief at issue here. And in fact, at page 2243 of the record, Mr. Rocha testifies specifically about why that bun requirement was not a valid accommodation.
Well, now tell me why, if wearing his hair long, long hair, and not cutting his hair is the constitutional right that's protected, how wearing his hair long but in a bun, where you can obviously see that his hair is long, doesn't accommodate that particular religious belief?
For a couple of reasons. One is that, as Mr. Rocha testified, the braids have a religious significance, and that they be worn in plain sight and that it be visible, the length of the hair, is a part of their religious practice and religious expression. So requiring it to be in a bun doesn't permit that religious expression.
Can't you plait it in a bun? I mean, I've seen it.
You could, but you wouldn't be able to see the length of the hair, which the plaintiffs told the school district early on was a sacred symbol of the length of the time they had been here and their life on this earth.
I mean, that is part of his religious belief, that other people see his hair long, even though he may know, I mean, for his religious belief, he knows he has long hair. That doesn't count.
Your Honor, the courts have been very cautious about parsing what practices are required under an individual's sincere religious beliefs. As the district court noted, quoting the Supreme Court in Thomas, where an individual draws the line on their religious practice is not something that the courts generally question. And Mr. Orocha and his son A.A. have clearly drawn the line at wearing the long braids in plain view. I'd add further that under the strict scrutiny required by Texas RFRA, the school district really cannot show that requiring the hair to be up in a bun or under the shirt serves any compelling government interest sufficient to justify an imposition on that religious exercise. Superintendent Rhodes testified that in crafting the exemption policy, he had none of the five interests stated for the dress code, safety, hygiene, order, authority, none of those interests in mind when he crafted the policy for AA. And he conceded that requiring AA to have his hair down the back of his shirt did not make the child any safer or any more hygienic. And indeed, AA attended school after the TRO was entered by the district court with his hair in two long braids, with no disruption or disorder, and no challenge to authority. So that indicates clearly that there's no compelling interest served, really no interest served, much less a compelling one, by the punitive policy that NISD is obliged to defend today. The only plausible interest that could be served by it is that Superintendent Rhodes recognized as being primary in his mind of imposing the community standard for boys' appearance on this child. And while dress codes generally are permissible in Texas school districts, imposing a community standard of appearance is not a sufficiently compelling justification for imposing this type of a burden on an individual's religious exercise.
You don't think a school district has an interest in maintaining grooming of students? In other words, if every student could come in with his hair long over his ears, down over his neck, some that way, some not way, some not combed, some that would, the any interference with that right would be a constitutional violation of those students' rights?
Not at all. In the aggregate, the dress code policy may well serve those interests in order and discipline and uniformity. But what the Constitution requires and what the Texas State Legislature has required in Texas RFRA is that we look at the necessity of the policy as applied to the individual whose religious exercise it burdens. And having this one child have long braids at school, it does not jeopardize, as this court said would be required in Merced, any of the school's stated interests behind its dress code. In fact, half of the school population, the female half, who do have long hair, have no regulation of the number of braids or whether they're tucked up or in a bun or beneath their clothing, and none of the school district's interests behind the dress code seem to be jeopardized by that. So it is clear that not only does the policy serve no compelling interest,
would the school have an interest in saying that no girls should come to school with shaved heads?
It may well have such an interest if it could show that it furthers order or discipline or I can't imagine how it would further hygiene. Or safety, it may do so. But if there was, for example, a female student whose religious belief conflicted with shaving her head, then I think the school would be hard-pressed to show that it had sufficient justification to impose on that religious belief. And that's exactly the kind of situation we have here.
Well, this all gets back to Judge Higginbotham's question about from whose standpoint do we view this? And under the Texas Religious Freedom Act, you look at the individual to see if an exception must be made. It's not a question of the validity of the policy. Is there an entitlement from the student's standpoint or prisoner, whoever it happens to be?
That's right. And under the Texas RFRA, you look at the individual in two ways. First, to see if that individual's practice is jeopardizing the school's compelling interest. And here, AA's practice standing alone isn't.
Well, do I understand your response to Judge Wiener's question and his question that the school has a compelling state interest in enforcing dress code rules?
In the aggregate, yes. But what this court required in Merced was specific evidence that the individual adherence practice jeopardizes those interests. And as indicated by the fact that AA attended school essentially without incident with no disruption or lack of safety or hygiene or any of those things after the entry of the TRO, there's just no specific evidence that the school district can point to show that its interests are jeopardized by this child wearing long braids. And the other way in which Texas RFRA requires us to look from the perspective of the individual is in establishing a substantial burden. It's not whether Superintendent Rhodes or NISD believes that it would be uncomfortable or humiliating to wear the long hair down the back of the shirt or for this Native American child to have to hide the braids that symbolize his religious faith. It's whether this five-year-old child himself would feel burdened by it.
But as I understand the law, it's not compelling interest for the in general, it is a compelling interest with regard to that individual.
Yes.
And it's described as the most demanding rule of constitutional law. And that's what the states reenacted to this statute, I thought.
Yes.
To escape the strictures of City of Bernie.
I'm not sure I'm following exactly, but I think...
Well, I won't take your time to... Just go further with that. I just have to just remind you that the way we get here is the effort by the Congress of the United States to enact to reenact effectively in the court's view, Supreme Court's view, to overrule the mutual rules of Smith. And in the City of Bernie, the court said you can't have the authority under Section 5 of the 14th Amendment to do that. And in response, these states have reenacted essentially that going back to what Congress did originally. And it puts this very heavy burden, and all I'm suggesting to you is that compelling interest is the focus upon the individual by definition. Otherwise, you can't have accommodation. And the question becomes either, what is this compelling interest of the school district that the boy's hair be in a bun and not come over his collar? And the only thing I hear is that, well, because that's our rule, that when we have an interest in tidiness and so forth. Maybe I misstate that, but correct me if I'm wrong, I thought that was the way it was set up.
I agree. The Texas RFRA clearly was intended by the state legislature to reinstate the strict scrutiny that was applied prior to Smith. That scrutiny requires a compelling interest of the highest order, as the Texas Supreme Court recently held in its bar case interpreting Texas RFRA. And there simply isn't one here.
Well, tell me then, I mean, in your analysis, the way you would approach the question, as I understand the question here, is whether the suggested method or the offer of the school board that he can wear his hair any way that he wants to, as long as it doesn't touch his collar, come over his collar, or over his ears. Now, is that the issue, whether that is a substantial burden on the right to wear his hair long, or to have long, his religious belief of long, that his hair should not be cut? That's his religious belief. How does that impose a substantial burden on his religious belief? Is that the way to approach it?
I think that it's clear that such a requirement, like a bun, would impose a substantial burden on his religious belief that his hair be worn long and in braids. But I think it's important to note that that was not the policy the school district adopted. And much as it would like to characterize its punitive policy as a suggestion for how to comply with the dress code, the record is clear that the school district interpreted the dress code as requiring boys to cut their hair right up until the 11th hour. In fact, that's what Superintendent Rhodes told the Houston Press in July of 2008, that you will cut your hair to the reasonable length required by the policies. So that is what they were dealing with, and the exemption that they...
So aren't we dealing with the accommodation that they have made? In other words, they have tried to accommodate his religious belief to conform with their policies, and they're saying, yes, you can have long hair. I mean, ordinarily, you're right. We said you were required to cut hair because that was the normal way to keep your hair off your collar over years. But now you have this religious belief, and you can keep it off your collar or off your ears in any way you want to. Wear your hair any way you want to. as long as it conforms to those minimal requirements. Now, how is that a substantial burden, and is that the issue in the case? That's what I want to know, really.
The issue is the policy that the school district adopted and that the district court enjoined, which was not permissive, but said AA will be required at all times at school and school events to have his hair in a single tightly woven braid down the back of his shirt. That policy...
They said that?
That's
now,
the,
I didn't that understand is... that they restricted him to... I mean, that they restricted him to have his hair down the collar. I mean, is that...
Yes, that's at 162 of the record. That is the policy adopted and stated at the...
They won't let him wear it any other way.
Not under the policy that we challenged, Your Honor. And that was only, again, after denying any kind of an accommodation or exemption for months.
I didn't understand it that way, so maybe I misunderstood the specific policy. I thought the policy was keep it off your neck and off your ears, and we don't care how you do it. I mean, they did suggest one of the ways you can wear it down here. They did suggest wearing it on his head. I think they suggested wearing it on his head, wearing it in a bun. He rejected all that, and then they said, well, you can wear it. We'll allow you then to wear it down your collar if that's the way you want it.
I thought that's chicken and egg. I thought what really, those were last-minute alternatives to the down-the-collar single braid, not vice versa.
That's right, and I think you mentioned before, the moving target here has been the school district's policy, and the record reflects that they've tried every way they can to avoid having to simply allow this child to attend school, as he has been doing since the TRO was entered, with his hair in two long braids. And the school district simply cannot meet its burden.
Hasn't the school district sat down and met on several occasions with the parents?
Yes.
And haven't they made several suggestions of accommodations? And haven't the parents rejected all of those? Every time they said, "Where you want you to cut your hair," and they said, "We can't cut it." Okay, you can't cut it. You can plait it. Just put it in a bun on top of his head. No, we need to plait it. That's plaiting became a religious problem, a significant assertion of their right. And they said, "Okay, you can plait it and wear it back here, or you can wear it on your..." No, we don't want to do that. And finally they say, okay, I mean, we're trying to accommodate you, and we're trying to accommodate you to our religion, our rules. You can plait it. If you want to plait it and wear it down your back collar, that will conform with our policy. I mean, it was just a matter of going from one to the other, not because they were changing their position so much, is the way I read the record or read the briefs, is but they were responding to your rejection of each proposal they made. Now tell me why I'm wrong about that.
Your Honor, as the district court found, the only accommodation that was suggested prior to the policy NISD ultimately adopted was that one that was made at the meeting immediately prior to that school board hearing at the 11th hour after counsel became involved for plaintiff, that AA wears hair in a bun. And Mr. Rocha explained to the district court satisfaction why that was not a sufficient accommodation of his belief and why he rejected it. But prior to that meeting on August 20th, 5 days before school began, the superintendent, the principal, and the school board all had uniformly rejected any request for an accommodation and, in fact, had provided no option other than Superintendent Rhodes' suggestion to the press that perhaps this family should find another school district.
But I thought that after that, whenever the school board sat down with the parents and the father explained how important wearing his hair long or not cutting his hair. I don't cut my hair except for any reason except to mourn. He cuts his hair whenever he wants to mourn, as I understand it. In fact, it is so important to me that when I had surgery on my head, I worked with my doctors to avoid cutting my hair. And the testimony I thought was of the school superintendent was I became convinced that if it was that important to him, that it was a sincere belief, and at that point I began to suggest alternatives. Is that inaccurate or correct?
That was the superintendent's testimony, and that conversation occurred moments before Superintendent Rhodes walked into the school board appeal, the second appeal, and proposed the punitive policy that he had never suggested to plaintiffs, although he admitted in the district court he had thought of it before, had never inquired whether that policy, unlike the Bunn suggestion that had just been rejected, might comport with their religious beliefs.
All right, well, let me, you say that, that they have not offered the alternative of wearing it in a way that he wants to wear it, but they've suggested only the alternative of wearing it down his neck, covered by his shirt. So if they offered to you, he could wear it any way he wanted, except over his ear or over his collar. Would that satisfy you as a non-substantial burden then?
No, Your Honor, because as Mr. Rocha testified below, their religious belief, and as the district court found, the belief is that the hair be worn long. And Mr. Rocha further explained that it be worn in plain sight and that each braid has religious significance. And at the end of the day, the policy that NISD settled on clearly burdens AA's religious belief under the test for substantial burden, not just in Adkins, but under Texas RFRA that was set out in Merced and Barr. And NISD simply cannot show any interest that's furthered by requiring one braid rather than two, inside the shirt rather than outside the shirt, and certainly not the compelling kind of interest that the Texas legislature has said is required under the law. So for that reason, and I see that my red light is on, for that reason, we would respectfully urge this court to protect AA's religious freedom by upholding the decision below.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Kelly. Mr. Hepworth, you have time for a moment.
Judge Shelley, you're exactly right. It was the school district's response to their requests that changed the policies. Now, let me make one thing clear. The plaintiffs keep trying to say the policy was the exemption. That's not correct. The policy is the dress code, and we offered an exemption. They then tried to bootstrap that into strict scrutiny. The exemption is not the policy. The policy is the dress code, not over the collar, not over the ears. And we tried a number of ways, and they rejected everything that we suggested. And all of those ways would allow him to not cut his hair. I'd like to read from the record. Page 2002, the court, your free exercise claim is limited to cutting. Ms. Terrell, right. Free exercise claim is limited to cutting. That's the exercise
free
of religion.
Free exercise claim congruent with the Texas religious freedom claim.
Right. So, but their religious belief here.
Free exercise is a constitutional.
Well, claim. That's true.
This is a statutory claim.
That's true, and they tried to add the other things in. The court, I'd like to point out, also said, while one could imagine the exemption policy, again, that's incorrect. It's not the exemption policy, but the exemption to the general policy might be one means of achieving NISD's goals. It is certainly not the most effective. So the court is admitting that we have adopted an exemption that would be one way of accommodating the religious beliefs and still putting forward our important interests of having discipline, respect for authority, learning to follow rules, all of those things. And the superintendent, I might add, testified that when dress codes and grooming codes are adopted, disciplinary referrals go greatly down and academic performance goes greatly up. And that is a very important interest.
That's justifying the general policy.
That's correct, and that's what we're challenging here.
But we're talking about the exemption, and then the proposer of the exemption, the school board, is then saying why it's justified. It has to be justified. The exemption has to satisfy from the viewpoint of the person proposing the religious activity, not from the standpoint of, okay, we're proposing this. It impresses us as okay.
Well, the court here said one could imagine the exemption policy might be one means of establishing the goals. It's certainly not the most effective. Well, it's not the court's job to say, well, okay, that might be one way to do it, but it's not the best way. That's substituting the court's job for the trustee's job.
Aren't we substituting the board's judgment for that of the religion?
The board had a right to enforce its call. All they have to do is have a rational basis.
You know, to tell you the truth, it's why we are up here on all of this. I mean, it really kind of boggles my mind on both sides, frankly, why we're here. But I don't know why the school board couldn't, just as a practical matter, say, okay, wear your hair however you want it. You say you're an Indian. You say that's your religion. I mean, I don't want to spend a lot of money for litigation. Wear it however you want it. I mean, why don't you just say that and be done with it?
Well, the question is, can a board have a policy or can't they? Well, and they clearly can.
I agree. I mean,
and just like in Carr, I mean, clearly the Fifth Circuit has said you can have a policy, it's enforceable, and the D'Amico case, they said, look, there's a bright line here. You can't ever enforce dress codes for colleges. You can always enforce dress codes for secondary schools. We offered many accommodations.
You could have a rule with one exemption, and that would be for anybody who has a sincere belief or insincere belief, for that matter, about being an American Indian and wanting to wear their hair in a plait, they can do it. But beyond that, we're not going to allow anybody else. You've got to claim to be an American Indian before you can wear your hair, and then you've got to wear it in a plait, and that's the exception.
Well, once again, that's going back to the court saying this is what we think you should do rather than what is what the...
No, it's really going back to what the Texas legislature did. Under the rules that are there, and also what the First Amendment says. What you really are doing, to my view, is that you are slicing and dicing his inquiring into the sincerity of religious view. You are skeptical that he has a religious view that it extends to wearing it over his collar. Now, I understand you may have that skepticism. The question, though, is how far you are allowed to probe the sincerity of belief or the quality of religious belief. And that's been virtually a no man's land in the First Amendment jurisprudence for a long, long time.
Well,
because otherwise,
that certainly is true, but that's why this one is limited to cutting hair. That's the religious belief that they admitted at trial. That's their only religious belief. And we tried to accommodate that. And I do want to correct one thing. Your Honor, Judge Jolly, you're exactly right. The exemption offered one way of complying with the dress policy, but all the other ways are still on the table, every one of them. He can wear his hair any way he wants to, as long as it's not over his ears and over his collar. That is and always has been the policy. And just because we offered an exemption, we said under the exemption, here's what the rules would be. But that's not the policy either. And it's not challenging the exemption. The exemption's not the policy. The dress and grooming code is the policy that we need to look at, and whether the exemption accommodated, and we believe it did.
Okay. Well, thank you, Your Honor. Hepworth. This panel is going to stand in recess for a few minutes, and then we will reconstitute the panel to hear the remaining cases of the day. So check with the clerk, the lawyers in the succeeding cases, just check with the clerk to know about when to come back in here. Should be less than 30 minutes.